And welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio, a bi-weekly audio program featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist, Mickey Fulp. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities, mining, and the junior resource sector. And we've kicked off today's show with Gusto, Mickey the Surf Lords, and Bert's Tiki Teardrop, and if that doesn't get you moving, boy, oh boy, you're dead, aren't you?
Well, you are, and that just happens to be one of my favorite haunts in downtown Albuquerque.
Okay, well, it's a great lively song, and I'm sure that that haunt is just as lively. And Mickey, before we get to the program and the meat of the matter, you got to be in cloud nine right now. Denver Broncos going to the Super Bowl again.
Again, and yep. I hope they win this year.
Okay, well, let's hope so. We're rooting for them. For this edition of the program, Mickey, we're going to focus on number 15 on the periodic table, phosphorus, I believe. 1669 or thereabouts was the year of its discovery. Fill us in.
It's number 15 on the periodic table between silicon and sulfur, nitrogen on top, arsenic below it, a solid nonmetal with several allotropes, the most common of which are white and red, but there's also violet and black. Pure phosphorus. It's highly reactive. It glows with a reaction with oxygen, which means that basically the surface burns. Mm-hmm. Does not occur as a free element on Earth, only as minerals in rock. Low density, and it's the origin of the word phosphorescence because it did glow in the dark, but that has nothing to do with mineral phosphorescence as we know it today. One isotope, stable, 31 is the atomic weight, but there are also about 30 radioactive elements with short half-lives, and phosphates are essential for all life on Earth.
Mm-hmm. I've read that phosphorus, Mickey, being the 13th element to be discovered, was sometimes called the devil's element, in part because of the number 13, I guess, but also because of its early uses of poisons, nerve agents, explosives.
So it's fair enough.
Yeah.
It was discovered, as you said, in 1669 by a German alchemist named Brandt, and he was evaporating urine to try to make gold. And he discovered something that was white and glowed in the dark and burned violently. And so that's how we've come up with a name for our title today. P is for phosphorus. So.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But then in a few years later, Sir Robert Boyle, famous English chemist, combined it with sulfur to make matches, the first matches in which we still used today. Strike anywhere matches are a combination of phosphorus and sulfur. By 1769, so late a century later, two chemists whose names we are familiar with before, Scheele, a Swede, and Lavoisier, a Frenchman, actually separated it into the element. And for quite a period of time, it was isolated by burning bone ash, mm-hmm. And that was the source until the 1840s, and then that leads into what we talked about last week, and that was the bird guano discovery.
Right.
So not only a source of nitrate for fertilizer, but also phosphates for fertilizer for a 30-year period. But then once again, by 1890, the electric arc furnace came into being, and man was able to use that high electrical charge and very high temperatures, mm-hmm. to extract phosphates from phosphate-bearing rock.
Yeah, and interesting, if we can backtrack a little bit, interesting story concerning matches, Mickey. Phosphorus-contained matches first produced in the 1830s. In 1906, I understand that white phosphorus was prohibited to be used in matches, and as a consequence, they developed the so-called strike-anywhere matches. So a bit of history there.
Well, there certainly is, and you know, white phosphorus. We'll talk. Might as well talk about the allotropes right now. Mm-hmm. White phosphorus, P4, is the least stable, most reactive, lowest density, and the most toxic of its allotropes. And so it's used still in major industrial processes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's self-igniting in air. For instance, it's combined with petroleum products to make napalm. It's used in smoke bombs. It's really nasty stuff. Then red phosphorus is a little bit different, and it doesn't ignite till about 300 degrees C. Violet is made by annealing red phosphate at very high temperatures, 550 degrees C, and then the black phosphorus is made under very high pressure, and it actually resembles the graphite structure.
Mm-hmm.
The occurrence of phosphates, many phosphate minerals in rocks, but the major sources are come from apatite, a calcium bearing phosphate. Currently, the fertilizer demand, which is mainly used for 2 times the population growth, which led to Malthusians lately,
mm-hmm.
We're familiar with those
doom and gloomers,
If you will,
mm-hmm.
To talk about peak phosphorus. But the earth supply is so vast, there's actually 1,000 parts per million or 0.1% in just the average rock. So we have something on the order of, 300 years of phosphorus resources.
Mm-hmm.
Because of pollution problems, there's been some innovative stuff come along, especially in two or three companies or countries in the world, so-called urine management, where they collect all the urine and they make phosphate from it,
mm.
Same way the guys made it when it was first discovered.
Yeah.
And Bill and Melinda Gates are actually funding some of this research.
Well, interesting stuff. So concerning whether or not we run out of phosphorus, you say there's absolutely no chance of that.
No mm-hmm. chance at all. I mean, if we need more phosphorus, the economics will come about where we can mine lower and lower grades. I mean, we have immense resources all over the earth, not really restricted into any particular country,
mm-hmm.
but of course they do occur in specific places, and that can lead us into some of the areas that they are produced.
Well, I believe the top producing regions, I think in order, Mickey, China, then we have Morocco and the Western Sahara area, and then the United States.
Well, that's true. Mm-hmm. And China probably produces about 2 or 3 times more, either Morocco or the U.S. I've got the U.S. second in production,
okay.
But
mm-hmm.
but we have immense deposits in divergent places, North Africa, the Middle East, China, the U.S., in sedimentary hosted rocks, so-called phosphorites, and those are the ones that are generally exploited. They are marine sedimentary rocks. They even occur in currently sub-economic resources, huge resources mm-hmm. on the continental shelves and seamounts in both the Atlantic and the Pacific. And then you have igneous sources, which are exploited to a certain degree, not much. Those occur in Brazil, Canada, especially northern Quebec, northern Ontario, Finland, Russia, South Africa, etc. World resources are estimated at well over 300 billion tons. And at current world production, latest figures, 2013,
mm-hmm.
The world used 224 million tons of phosphate rock. So
mm-hmm.
do the math there. That's basically 1,000 years, well over, I'm doing the math in my head, 1,500
right.
years of world resources.
Okay, what does that mean in terms of prices for the commodity and whether or not it's economical at a certain point in time to bring it out of the ground or just leave it there?
Well, it depends on where we need to bring it out of the ground, of course. Prices have, for the most part, been relatively stable over the last 5 years. They've, with a low of about $77 in a ton and a high of $1 or $103 a ton, 2014 was average was right in the middle of that at $90 a ton.
Okay, Mickey, we outlined the top producing areas of the world. Let's talk about how it is produced. Can you walk us through that process?
Sure. It's apatite-containing rock, whether igneous or sedimentary in origin. Apatite being a calcium fluorophosphate, very common mineral. Heated very high in one of these electric arc furnaces, 12 to 1500 degrees C, with silica sand and coke, which is a carbon product, mm-hmm. makes phosphorus vapor. Then they condense it underwater. It can only be handled underwater. So if you remember in chemistry, high school chemistry, you always had there'd be a jar of phosphorus sitting around in water. So so they condense it underwater, get a couple of very valuable byproducts out of it, silica slag, which is used in the construction area industry, mm-hmm. and then also fluorides, which is used for water treatment.
Okay.
It's a very energy-intensive process, though, so it uses lots of electricity. Then molten phosphorus is transported by rail. It can be quite dangerous. You know, there's been some famous train wrecks and big phosphorus fires. As far as what it's used for, mainly fertilizer, mm-hmm. essential to all life. And that making phosphate fertilizer is also the main and largest use of sulfur. So you end up with these phosphoric acid, sulfuric acid, neutralize those, make bases, and you've got phosphate fertilizer. Other uses, just goes on and on, mm-hmm. Baking powder, toothpaste, pesticides, mm-hmm. plasticizers. One of the biggest uses is detergents.
Yep.
And even though it's the element burns, it compounds are used as flame retardants. It's used to soften water. It's used metallurgically in the steel, bronze, and copper industries. Bone china is made by from bone ash, used in your favorite soft drink, especially colas. Fire bombs, smoke bombs, explosives, tracer ammo. It's now banned for use of civilians in our so-called rules of war, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. But that's commonly violated over the years since there's been three bans, 1980, 1995, 2009. Here's some lists of violations. Iraq, 1998 by Saddam. Iraq, 2004 by the U.S. Israel, repeat offender. 2006, 2008, 2009 against Lebanon and also in the Gaza Strip. The Taliban used it against the Afghans and again in 2009. Saudis against the Yemenis. 2011, Libyans used it against their own folk. And then lately, the Russians used it in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. So basically, as smoke screens, but it's so caustic to humans and so toxic that it leads to very horrible burns and nasty stuff.
Nasty stuff indeed. Boy, I didn't think that list was ever going to end, Mickey. So nasty stuff indeed, Mickey. Tell us about the biological role of phosphorus.
Well, it's essential to all life forms. Both appears in DNA and RNA. The average human, it's got about 0.7 kilograms. That'd be about 1.5 pounds for Americans that are listening, mainly in our bones and teeth as apatite. Same mm-hmm. mineral it occurs in rock. We, on average, consume and excrete 1 to 3 grams per day. And as a food source, very seldom will you see people that have a phosphorus deficiency, and that would be only people that get no protein in their diets. Mm-hmm. We touched on the toxicity, mm-hmm. And that's mainly organophosphates used in grenades and smoke screens, neurotoxins, napalm. There's a disease called bossy jaw, which is necrosis of the jaw, essentially death of the bone. That came from The match industry that you referred to before, right, the ban on using white phosphorus in 1906. Here's a nice one for you. If you ingest it, white phosphorus, you will get something called, get this, Rob, smoking stool syndrome.
I don't. That draws up.
Sound pleasant.
Yeah, yeah. You got a picture in your mind, and you just don't want to look at it. You know, it's
exactly.
Like holy.
And for all those Albuquerqueans or in the audience, or people that remember and are quite fond of the series Breaking Bad, it's used in the manufacture of methamphetamine. So, in I think the second episode of Breaking Bad, when they were cooking in the RV,
right,
and
Walter
attacked by a couple of bad guys, Walter set a phosphorus fire, and that led to the death of one of the bad guys. I can't remember their names,
right,
and then the other guy had very serious lung burns, and they chained him up downstairs in Jesse's basement, if you remember that episode. But that was Walt's first chemical trick in Breaking Bad.
Well, all kinds of things, wild things went on in Jesse's house, that's for sure.
That
was quite the character. Let's wrap it up with a bit of a comment on whether or not there's an investing angle here, Mickey, a pure play on phosphorus, or is it, if you want to buy into this story and the demand for phosphorus, you look to the companies that make fertilizer?
Well, you certainly do, and that's the world's biggest fertilizer companies. A list would be Mosaic, Monsanto, Agrium, which is a Canadian corporation, I think.
Yep.
JR Simplot, CF Industries. It's kind of big boy football in that regard. U.S. is self-sufficient and the world's largest exporter of fertilizer, with mines in Florida, Idaho, a couple other states, North Carolina, Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of controlled by the world's largest agricultural companies. But
right,
that said, Rob, that doesn't keep the juniors from wanting to participate. I counted at least 20 companies worldwide on various stock exchanges, Toronto, Australia, London, with projects in 13 countries, none of which have been successful.
Okay. There's always that footnote, isn't there, to a lot of the juniors?
It certainly is, and especially in down times like this.
Okay. Well, that's a good way
to... Been some pretty discouraging failures over the last few years. So.
Okay. Well, let's wrap it up on that note, Mickey. We're going to do it all over again in about 2 weeks' time. What's the game plan?
We'll go next door on the periodic table and talk about the remaining large agricultural mineral, and that's sulfur.
Okay. We've got the Surf Lords and Burt's Tiki Teardrop cranking it up in the background, Mickey, so let's wrap it up there. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you, Rob.
That's Mickey Fulp, the Mercenary Geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com. And you can always hear Mickey's latest opinion exclusively on mercenarygeologist.fm and kitco.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.